Today, I'm going to find out what happens when you get an energy fanatic that used to be an architect, but now gets to build spaceships in war zones. Today on the Fly Filmmaking.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to On the Fly Filmmaking. My name is Mary Lou Mandel, and today I am joined by Seth Reed, production designer for The Long Road Home, along with a bunch of other really cool projects. Thank you for joining me.
You're welcome. Yeah, My pleasure.
We started with some Sia today because I know like you had like the lights and the headphones. All of this is a new experience. You're a pro, I can tell. But do you feel a little bit more comfortable with Sia?
Absolutely. Yeah? Makes me feel great. Reminds me of many a show that I worked on.
Good, good. Yeah, you know, sometimes a little pump-up song. That's all you need.
Yep.
Yeah, let's swing from the chandelier.
Yep.
Yeah, have you ever built a chandelier?
No, I've just rented many a beautiful chandelier in my day, but never had to actually build one.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine because you started in architecture. So today we're talking with Seth Reed, who is a production designer for The Long Road Home. He used to be an architect. He's had a long history in entertainment industry and a really wonderful Instagram. Tell everyone where they can find you on social media.
They can find me at Twitter at Seth Reed Studio. They can find me at Instagram at Seth Reed Studio. They can find me on the web at SethReedStudio.com.
I love that when people have the same thing across all boards because that's how I am. I'm like, Mary Lou Mandel, everywhere on the internet. You're not going to find someone else. It's just as long as you spell it correctly. So Seth Reed Studio,
yes.
Everywhere on the internet. Awesome. So make sure you guys check that out. So you're a production designer now. What is it that you would explain to somebody? You're like, what's a production designer? What is it your job? What is it that you do? How did you explain it?
Well, the production designer is one of a group of creative individuals on the show that is responsible for the look of the show. So that would be, let's say, the director, the DP, and the production designer all working very closely together to try to determine what's everything's going to look like. The colors, the set dressing, the environment that they're working in. A lot of times the lighting and it's all discussed very clearly between even the designer and the DP just separately. So all the environments around the actor.
Okay, so it's everything that's like outside of the actual actor. And because of like you've got to do really fun environments. So it's not just somebody's house. You're in space.
Yes. And let me just add, actually, now that you mention it, it would also, a lot of times, will involve other things, too. For instance, costumes may be very closely mixed in with what we're doing. All the locations that we go to find would be very specific, and they might follow a theme or a track that we've already tried to figure out.
Okay, so then if the show as a whole is trying to follow a theme, then would the production designer then inform wardrobe? Or you guys are working together?
We're working very closely together.
Okay.
Many times you're setting up a palette, for example, a two or three or four color palette that wardrobe is going to incorporate straight into what they're wearing. Mm-hmm. Maybe their shirt, their collars, everything.
Okay.
Whatever it is, the uniforms, if it's the expanse, it may all fit together.
Yeah. Oh, that's so neat. Like when I was going through the photos of the projects that you've worked on, I was super excited to talk to you because I'm a sci-fi nerd and I've always wanted to go visit a spaceship. My dream, one day it's going to happen. I'm going to get to be on a sci-fi show. I'm going to wear like a space suit and feel like I'm in space. It's going to be wonderful. And what I got a lot from your photos is that things are really like everywhere. Like your sets are like there's a ceiling, there's sides, there's a bottom. They don't seem hollow.
Absolutely.
And whether or not they are in real life or not, that's how they come off on screen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're trying to build as complete an environment as we can. And we're working really closely with the director and the DP to try to determine as much as we can in advance what we're going to see. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we always provide extra, but we try to give, if we can, a full 360-degree environment.
Yeah, I know that some of your sets for The Long Road Home are like that as well. So we'll get into that. But first, I want to talk to you about your journey up to this point before you got to this really wonderful project, A Long Road Home. You were art director and art department also. So now you're production designer. Is art director the same below that? Is it that's in your department?
Yes. There's five or six positions in the art department or something like that. So you would start out as a PA and maybe you're an art department coordinator. You might be a set designer, assistant art director, supervising art director, production designer.
Gotcha.
So I've done all of those except be a PA.
Okay.
So I was actually a full architect, practicing architect when I decided to make the switch. And I kind of had to go all the way back to the beginning and start all the way over.
Yeah, because when you start a new career, but you at least you have a basis that really could set you apart.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so how long were you in architecture, and then why did you get out of it?
I was in architecture for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. So I went to architecture school. I worked for some people, and then I was working on my own. And I had friends that were in the film business, and one of my friends said, hey, why don't you try coming and working on my show? And I had no idea what they were talking about at all. But I was like game for a try. It was kind of slow right then in architecture. So out I went for a big adventure to Arizona. And I fell in love with it. They put a screw gun in my hand, and I ran off with a tool belt, and I started building stuff. And I was like, wow, I can't believe I get to do all this.
Yeah.
And we built a fantasy right off the bat. Tombstone was an amazing journey right off the bat.
Like your first, like, oh, just get into filmmaking happens to be Tombstone, which was amazing. And it's like not just... oh, a regular movie in a city. Like, you get, it's a Western.
It was crazy. We were all out in the middle of the desert. The funny thing is, back in those days, like, the entire crew stayed at the same Holiday Inn. Mm-hmm. So I had Sam Elliott and, you know, all these people, like, jumping in the pool, like, my kids, their kids, everybody's there together.
Yeah.
And we all went out and made a film, and every night we'd watch dailies. We'd all watch dailies together. So you really felt this really strong community.
Yeah.
And we just had a really fun time. I'm not going to say it wasn't stressful.
Right.
Because it was super stressful.
Mm-hmm.
But you're exhausted, and you run into the ground, but you also end up with something really fabulous.
Right. So then... this is usually something that I ask at the end, but because that was your first Hollywood thing, were there any on-the-fly moments where you were, you know, had to figure out something very quickly because it was new to you?
Oh, yeah. As an architect, I was sort of, my palette was limited, my ideas were limited. So when they would say, like, okay, design, like, can you quickly design a staircase and go build this staircase with a bunch of guys? I, of course, just didn't understand, like, I needed to get historical reference. I needed to really tie it into what we'd already seen and where it was going.
Yeah.
I was so new, I had no idea.
So you were learning
on
the job.
So I learned on the fly.
Yes.
I really did. But by the end of that show, I had books everywhere, and I clipped all kinds of photographs, and, like, all of a sudden, I was, like, all about Westerns.
Yeah. Did you have some guidance on that project that helped teach you those things?
Well, there were other people in the department that were very experienced. So we had a very experienced art director at the time, and it was just a great learning with all of these people. Like, one of the great things I would say about working on film in general or in TV is that there's so many talented people around you. So many, they just bring so much to the table. And I found myself growing far more than in architecture, which I know there's architects that are going to be really mad at me for saying that, but it was an explosion.
Yeah.
It really was.
Well, you learn in different places. Like, there could be somebody who's in film, like in the art department in film, that somehow ends up in architecture, and they're like, this is what I wanted, structure. you know, I wanted these clear-cut plans and something that stays up forever versus,
yes,
like, a film that lives in a picture.
That's correct.
You know, it's a totally different thing. Like, people can't continually go through your building.
Yes.
They can enjoy it visually, but they can't, you know, walk through it.
That's true.
Yeah.
Although nowadays you can, because... we'll probably talk about this in a minute, but everything we do is virtual.
Yeah.
All our preparation is virtual. So we actually, at some part of the process, we take the director and we walk them through.
Yeah.
Through a virtual structure.
That's
and
so neat.
We end up with all of this crazy stuff. Like, here's what your thing's going to look like when you're done. And maybe it's a Photoshop painting. It's, mm-hmm, something incredibly beautiful.
Yeah. And so that's cool to know about then how the industry has changed from when you first got into it to now. There's a lot of virtual, like, directors are probably expecting to see these full-on renderings at this point.
Oh, my gosh. They so expect so much, and they expect it really fast, too. They expect you to just pop it out really quickly. So in the old days, we'd make a cardboard model or a styrofoam model. Mm-hmm. We'd have a little teeny lipstick camera, and we'd be doing this and going through with the camera. Now, forget all of that. We don't do any of that. Like, that's, I mean, actually, we did make a model. It's true, for the Long Road Hope, because the model was like 10 feet long or something. Mm-hmm. But really, honestly, we don't work that way if we can help it, because time requires us to generate ideas very quickly.
Yeah.
And to, I think, I know I'm probably getting ahead of myself, but I try to, in our department, we really try to make sure that the DP and the director and the rest of the production, the producers, everybody really understand what we're trying to do. That's absolutely key. So they're walking into a set that they already understand and they already see. They saw it visually all the way.
Right, because for them to start doing their work, they need to know what space they're working with.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then everything can mesh together sooner instead of holding till the set exists.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Cool. So cool. And so I know you've worked on tons and tons and tons of movies, but I wanted to ask you about Fight Club because that's one of my favorites.
Sure.
So what did you do there?
I was an assistant art director. We were still drawing by hand in those days. So I spent a certain amount of time drawing, a lot more time working in Excel, making breakdowns, super boring breakdowns of
different stuff.
Oh, my gosh. It made me crazy. But, you know, what all the notes for a set and all the budgeting things that we could figure out. But then I also got put just out on a set to manage because I brought with me the architecture and the building experience. They were like, Seth, you're out in the field. We're going to have you manage the building of the house, for example.
Yeah.
So I was down there building that house. I was all over San Pedro for all the other sets we were doing. And I actually spent a lot. All I can say is I was out in the field every day.
Yeah, I can imagine. How long was that shoot?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. Let's see. That was such a long time
ago. It was like so a while ago.
I would say back in those days, Fincher got a lot of shoot time. Yeah. So it was probably a 60 or 70 day shoot.
Yeah. And you probably worked every single day.
Yeah, I did. Yes. So super early call times, long days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So then let's move into some of your more recent stuff. Shut Eye, which is on Hulu. That's a project that you are production designer for.
Yes.
And so explain to me what is the look of that?
The look of that, well, that was Los Angeles in a sort of dreamy, picturesque kind of way. Actually, it was San Fernando Valley.
Ooh.
So even more. So unfortunately, we were making it in Vancouver. So we're fighting the green.
Why not just film it here?
I know. They filmed season two.
Okay.
So I was season one, and I got there, and I was like, whoa, how are we going to do this? Because it should be dry. You should see lots of cactus and palm trees and agave and... You're up in Vancouver where things are flowering and popping out in crazy
like,
color
we don't
everywhere.
Have that.
So actually for that, are you asking like what my design kind of ideas were?
Yeah.
So what I did with that was I brought in as much visualization in terms of photography and painting that I could.
Okay.
So I was looking at, let's say, the artistry of L. Mack or Banksy or any of these people that are like, if you go around LA right now, you just see graffiti murals everywhere.
Right. And it's like a hot thing and kind of a thing of pride that businesses have where they're like, ooh, I got some good street art.
Oh my gosh, LA.
Love the street art. It's great.
Yes.
I mean, take an Instagram picture next to this street art.
I'm going to do it. There's wings and all kinds of crazy stuff. Absolutely.
And that I've noticed kind of is a trend of things that intentionally are for people to take photos in front of. Like, it's built for that.
Exactly.
Yeah,
they're
cool.
Very much. And there's also a lot of representations that are so LA. So Chicana women, for example. L. Mack is like a master. But I also got photography like and great art. So I would go back to artists like Hockney and Diebenkorn. I'd go to the world of porn because Larry Sultan made an amazing photography book about the porn industry in LA. And it actually worked for the themes of that crazy show. So it was the colors and not the porn side, but I mean, you know, just the look of it all was like amazing. So,
yeah, because that does inform it. I don't know too much about the porn industry, but I know that it's a lot filmed here.
Yeah, it is. He made a tableau of amazing images of people that kind of had this decadence of LA and sort of like the weird casualness being in weird situations. And it just was great. Yeah. So, and we also went looked at the work of some of the rock and roll photographers, like pulled a little bit of that, and you see it translated into Shedi. You'll see amazing shots. Like there's a shot I have in my head of Isabella Rossellini in her kitchen, and the ceiling is lit like with neon blue with the patterns, and the floor is really cool, and there's a really cool painting at the end, and she's just there like that. So we try to translate some of that stuff into the show as much as we could.
That's so neat. And then so you, because you live in L.A., you've lived in L.A. a while, so you had access, you had kind of a bank of inspiration already that you could pull into.
Yes.
So I definitely see where you could take that to the next level versus somebody who's never lived in L.A.
You had to be an L.A. person. You had to understand that there's blue everywhere, there's blue sky, there's palm trees. There's certain things that are, like, absolutely iconic to L.A.
Yeah.
And so you're, like, it was just so weird because I'm up there in Vancouver, so all the time we'd be trying to figure out a visual effect to, like, tell them, like, okay, we'll shoot this, but this is what it's supposed to look like when we're done, okay?
Yeah.
So we're constantly, like, painting a photograph over or a screen grab over and saying, fix this later.
Yes, please fix it in post. Yeah, there's, like, that, when it's something so specific to a location, like, it makes me think of the beginnings of Dexter.
Uh-huh.
And that was supposed to be in Miami. So season one, they did shoot it in Miami, and I went to high school and college in Florida, so I was like familiar with this Miami vibe, and I was like, oh, it's great. Those poor actors and everybody is sweating so much, but that's what that is. But then when it switched, I like didn't know that they switched, but I picked up on something being off.
Yeah.
And then I figured out that, oh, they moved their locations to LA, which is probably better for everyone. It was fine.
Yeah.
But I noticed that little vibe feel only because I knew Florida.
Yeah, and I mean, like, for instance, there's the ranch house is a really big deal in Los Angeles as a type of housing. And you see it all over the valley, like Tarzana and, you know, everywhere.
And so, those are like Encino. The long flat houses.
It's a longish flat house with a gable roof, usually has wood shingles. It might have a little, like, thing on the top for birds called a dove coat. And then they have, like, cut glass windows. And it's kind of a look that's really an L.A.
It's
look.
Very L.A., yeah.
Very L.A. So they're like, oh, well, we're going to do it in the ranch house. And here, come and see our ranch house. So it's a Vancouver version of a ranch house. So, of course, I was, like, just stressing, like, how are we ever going to make this work?
How are we going to make this click together? But they moved here.
Yes.
So,
and
good.
Then they got something better.
Good move.
Yeah.
It's a good move. So that's an on-the-fly kind of thing. Like,
yes.
You, even a bigger show, when you're just getting started, you have a location. You can't get the exact thing. You got to make it work somewhere else.
You have to make it work.
Yeah. Good. Oh, my gosh. All right. So then The Expanse.
Yes.
That's had to be so much fun.
Yes.
Yeah, those sets just look so amazing.
Yes.
Where are they at? I need to go there. I'm following you to work.
Those were on five gigantic stages in Toronto at a beautiful studio called Pinewood.
Okay.
Which is where I think they shot Star Trek later and everything else. So I would say Expanse was probably the single most fun thing. Like, they're really letting me do this kind of thing. Like, I can't believe it. I mean, we would design these magnificent sets that we had a set that was 30 feet in the air just to get the actors up, and then you dropped it, you look down into something because you're supposed to be falling down.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe, like, we designed it and they said, yeah, okay. And I was like, okay. So then the next time they came, it was up and they were, like, completely blown away. They saw the structure of it and they walked in like, oh, boy. So they let us do stuff. They really did.
That's fun. That had to be really freeing to be like, all right, well, then we really have room to play.
Yeah, we did. We had a lot of room to play. We had really a lot of sets. I mean, it was over 10 episodes, and I only did season one, by the way. So I set up the show, but I didn't
do
season
two. Yeah,
you set
it up. I feel like season one's the one you want.
Yeah, it was, because we got to design the key spaceship, and we also designed some of the really big events that happened in the show that set the show up. Mm-hmm. But designing the key spaceship, the lower floor, the upper floor is a huge two-story space that's gorgeous, and it's all made out of, the people up in Toronto are fantastic. It was all made out of real steel, and it was really amazing.
Right, okay, cool. Then with a lot of these, so you did a lot of movie, and now it's a lot of television. And yes. I saw in another interview that you were really excited to be working with television.
I am. I'm very excited to be working with television because the scripts are fantastic these days. The energy is all there. Everybody's moving into TV because there's so much material that can be done. There's so much new technique, so much sort of alternative ways to do things now. So we work fast. They give us leeway, and they want to see what we're doing.
Right. And then how do you see that it's different than film?
Well, it's different than film because the pace is much, much faster, for starters, much faster. And it's also different than film because the budget constraints are very specific.
In
television, it's a different sort of economic model that everybody has to work with, but we do too. So we know we only have a certain amount of money, and we have to dream on about how we're going to get it done.
Yes.
So sometimes it doesn't always work out exactly right, and I do the best I can, but you know, sometimes we go over, and sometimes we just do what we have to do, you know, to make it great.
Yeah, definitely. So. I'm not sure. Does that all come out at once, or they release it week to week?
They're going to release it. Let's see. I think they released it week to week last time.
Okay. Yeah, cool. So then the approach would be the same for the other shows that you're doing.
They just finished season two. Mm-hmm. So I was very busy on Log Road Home. I had probably two more months of work, so I couldn't switch to Shut Eye. Mm-hmm. So someone else is doing Shut Eye, did season two of Shut Eye.
Okay. Cool. Well, then, but you got to move on to building. War Zone.
Yes.
So Long Road Home is about Black Sunday, which is what I had in my notes here, was that the 1st Cavalry Division from Fort Hood was ambushed.
Correct.
In Baghdad. So it's very military-based. It's very sensitive material because it's real people's experiences.
Yes. You're nailing it.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Yeah. So let's check out the trailer for Long Road Home, and then we'll talk about like how amazing this thing looks.
You make memories on those days like April 4th that you never forget about, no matter how much you want to.
You cannot look at them, recreate those characters, and not think of the real soldiers and the real families.
This is a project that actually cares about telling the story right.
It's been an incredibly massive operation here in Fort Hood. This is, in fact, the largest set in North America operating today.
I think it's a real privilege that we're able to be a part of this project.
All the actors, they want to get as much correct as possible.
I owe it to them to do this the best that I can, because the country should know.
Awesome. And this is already out on National Geographic Channel.
Yes. In fact, tonight will be episode 3.
Episode 3.
At 10 o'clock. I think they moved it from 9 to 10 o'clock.
Yes. And they're also streaming online.
Yes.
Yeah,
they absolutely are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I only got a little bit into watching it because for me, I'm very empathetic. So when I know something's real life, like to make a murder, I can't watch it.
Yeah.
Like it's too much for me and too heavy for me. So I looked at a lot of photos.
Yes.
And it looked super, super realistic. I mean, you said that in that trailer, there's a shot of your model.
Yeah, there was a shot of the styrofoam model that was for one quick second when Miko Alani was talking.
Oh my gosh, that's so great. So you're famous.
I don't think I'm famous. But,
but you're styrofoamous.
Yeah, I'm foamous, yeah.
Gotcha.
Oh, so, those are cool.
Yeah, so we've got a bunch of photos that were sent over by the wonderful people at Impact 24. Thanks, Marilyn. And let's talk about what we've got here. So this is a 3D rendering?
Yeah, so that's just a 3D model right there of the existing buildings along with some of our new buildings. And at the very back of it is a blue screen, which next to it should be another photo. There it is. So this is part of an actual process where we, in just in the model form, we try to show the the directors and the producers what we think it should all look like when we're done. Mm-hmm. So that's before and that's after.
Oh, okay. So it's a little city already and correct. You guys built on top of it.
That's correct. Okay. And we've added out in, because in the Long Road Home, we had this one street, which that was the street there too, that we had to work with, but we had to make that street be a lot of different streets. Mm-hmm. And we had to change the buildings virtually when the opportunity arose.
Right.
So that one building that you saw, let's say with the angled roof, which was what most of that discussion was mm-hmm. about, that changes.
Okay.
And this is one example of how it changes.
And where was this at?
This is at Fort Hood on the Army base.
Oh, okay.
Surrounded by
wow.
soldiers, like they're like the, you know, there's a gunnery range next door. So
there's a lot of emotion.
There's a
probably,
lot like, going on.
You feel a
yeah.
lot happening.
Yes.
Right there. And it is the largest standing set in North America?
It was. It no longer exists.
Who beat you?
Well, I don't know who beat us now, but when we had it up,
uh-huh.
it was the largest set.
Right. And you were filming all this year? Were you filming a little bit last
yes.
year, too?
No. We filmed from early April through the end of June.
Okay.
So we went pretty quickly.
Gotcha. And where is Fort Hood? Is that in Texas?
Fort Hood is an hour north of Austin in Texas.
Okay. Right on. So mm-hmm. it was the largest set, but now not.
All
because
gone.
You took it down.
We had to take it down yeah. as soon as we were done because it was on Army property
mm-hmm.
and it was actually part of a training base that they
yeah.
use. And so we had to take it down right away. We were always desperately trying to figure out how to keep it up because they loved it. And it was clearly would be a very effective for
yeah.
to them to use for
That's
training.
Why I was surprised that they would have you take it down.
Well, first of all, Texas is kind of a harsh environment.
Right.
And it wasn't built really to last, which was something we tried at the very beginning mm-hmm. to work out with them. And we couldn't wait any longer.
Gotcha.
So we just had to go.
Uh-huh. And so, and then it ends up being more disposable because you had to make
yeah.
moves. Yeah, because my dad was in the Air Force and he was a firefighter trainer. And
uh-huh.
I know in their training facilities, they just had all this little city.
Yes.
Where they had to like light buildings on fire and then have people go and like
uh-huh.
save dummies out of it. And there's this giant plane that they would
uh-huh.
set on fire. I'd sit in the fire truck and we would put it out. It was amazing.
Uh-huh.
But that's where I was surprised that they would
yes.
have you guys take it down.
Yeah.
If it's a training facility.
It was very
that's
sad.
Unfortunate.
Yeah, they didn't want to, but they knew that they had to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now you have it on
yeah.
video, on the internet.
Well,
it never dies.
85 full buildings.
85.
So they were either two or three-sided buildings,
uh-huh.
occasionally even four-sided.
Yeah.
And then all of them, many of them, you would be in the balconies, on the roofs. You know, you could actually be up inside these buildings.
That's so cool. And that's got to be so good for the actors.
Yes.
Because they're fully immersive.
Mm-hmm.
places.
Yes.
Which as more of the production designers and directors of photographers or DPs that we're talking to on this show
mm-hmm.
like that style
mm-hmm.
and then they just go handheld
yep.
and make it work. And then it's good for the production designers because they get to build a fully realized set.
Yes.
And
yeah.
the DPs get to move anywhere that they need to go. The performers
mm-hmm.
I'm sure love it
because yes.
it's just real.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. It was filled with a lot of stuff and a lot of places you could go to.
Yeah.
And I'd say they pretty much utilized everything that they could.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can always do more. You're always like, oh God, why didn't I take care of that or whatever.
Yeah.
But
were there any little rooms that you're like, they never used that, but I thought they would use like, maybe I was like a bathroom or something. For some
oh,
reason
yeah.
I'm thinking there's like a little bathroom
no,
in a building.
No, absolutely. You always end up building stuff that they don't use
yeah.
and you're frustrated by it. But on the other hand, I'm glad that we built as much as we could. We had to fight hard to get permission to build all of this because
uh-huh.
the production obviously couldn't afford it. It was
yeah.
a gigantic project. So I would have built more.
Yeah.
They kind of almost, you know, stopped me.
Yes.
Because we would have kept going. We had 75 carpenters working 8 days past we started shooting. We were shooting somewhere else. We still had 75 carpenters and painters over there
what
working.
A big team.
It was a big team.
That's
yeah.
awesome. So
yeah.
there's like productions happening and then buildings happening.
Frantically.
Yeah. I just imagine like your child version of you in your head with like all these Legos. And
I literally
built everything.
I did that.
Yeah.
I actually had Lego when I was a kid, and yeah. I did a lot of that. I had little tanks and soldiers, and I had big Lego, and I used to photograph the setups that I had.
You've been training for this job.
I swear. Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
You manifested it.
I did.
That's great.
It's worked out perfect.
Awesome. So let's go through some more of these photos
sure.
that we have, because I just thought that they were so wonderful.
If you go back to that green one with the guy. Oh, well, anything I can talk
yeah,
about
we'll
anything
just scroll
you put
through
up.
In order. Yeah.
Sure. So that particular picture that you're looking at right there is.
So we, right now, for those that are listening on podcast, there's a, it's like a street, there's a tank and a bunch of soldiers that are walking through. Plus there's debris like from the people who live there.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. So the debris is culturally specific. In other words, literally the bags tend to have color and they tend to throw their trash on the street like that, mm-hmm. which is all over the Middle East. Depending on where you are, they sweep the bags out and they either drop them by the front door or they carry them to the corner. Then the sheep and the goats eat all the trash out of that. So that there's a natural kind of, I don't know if you call it natural, but
like
disposal
a,
system.
Feeding the
yes. And
ecosystem?
By the time you're done, there's very little left. And that's just the way it works over there. So
okay.
you see trash everywhere.
Right.
And that's kind of, I would say, Sadr City and Baghdad in general, maybe a little more trash because there was pretty much some chaos happening right then.
Right.
But that's also part of the setup.
Okay.
So that's the same set, but that's a photo, that's a painting of the set.
Okay.
And you saw the picture before with the soldiers, which was actually the set. This right here is an actor who's portraying Al-Sadr, and you can see us doing a photo shoot, and you see the real Al-Sadr down in the lower left.
Wow.
And in the middle, lower middle, is some of the posters on the wall when mm-hmm. they're all done.
Yeah, so you guys were recreating posters that were real.
Yes.
So was there a reason for not using the real ones?
Well,
just because the actor was in it?
I don't know that. I think we all felt uncomfortable to use the real
yeah.
person.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't feel, I mean, maybe we could have cleared it or maybe we couldn't, but no one wanted to go there.
Right.
It just felt like we should do this with an actor.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Because
so.
I always wonder sometimes with historical pieces that if it serves the story better to use the real one or not.
Right.
But I see where the sensitivities could lie and where it could go either way.
I will always use the real one if possible because mm-hmm. I think it adds to the sort of like the reality and the authority of the show by mm-hmm. doing that. But in this case, he's a real live active person right now.
Yeah.
And he still has a Mahdi army. He still has control over there. So mm-hmm. we don't want to like get involved in that.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I hope your actor was good. So at least
yeah,
that
he's thing. Actually the son of, I mean, I'll just digress for one quick second,
yeah.
but he is the son of a Iraqi mechanical engineer that helped the U.S. Army, performed all kinds of miracles for the U.S. Army.
Wow.
And they brought that man and his entire family over, gave them all new identities and passports and everything. So that man that you just saw there, uh-huh. he's actually a mechanical engineer also. Like,
yeah.
Like a double PhD or something. Like the whole family is geniuses.
Yeah.
So there's his brother is in the show also.
And he's exploring his art.
Yes, and he's exploring his art, right. His artistic side.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right, so what's happening in this photo?
In that last one right
yes.
there, I'm just pointing out a section of the town where we have, first of all, a bunch of blown up walls and stuff, but we also have posters on the wall. So you can actually see that same image, along with other images of imams and sort of culturally specific and important imagery that truly is present.
Right.
And we had, all of this was vetted out by that same Iraqi man mm-hmm. with all the language, because it's in Arabic.
Yeah.
So we're messed up because we don't really, we can't translate that easily.
Right.
And not only that, but it's even specific to Baghdad.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just have like a Syrian person or a Jordanian person.
Yeah.
You need an Iraqi person from Baghdad. So we actually, at the beginning, it's so funny because at the beginning of the shoot, we got in a little teeny bit of trouble because we had a surprising number of Iraqis, including some from Sadr City, that were working as extras.
Uh-huh.
And they were running around pointing out like, that's wrong. You never say that. And we're like, really? Wow. Like, how would we know? So
yes.
we actually ran around and changed everything. We brought two Iraqi Sadr City guys, and we changed it, and we just painted over what we had and quickly changed all the writing.
Right. You do the best that you can. And yes. You, like, even brought in people who would know better, but still, you're going to miss some things.
You have to, got to try. So I was like, what should I do right now? What should I do? Okay, we're going to do it, you know.
Yes.
So
go in and just be open to making the adjustments.
We posted a picture, too, which you might see of a man helping us paint signs.
I saw that Instagram. I'm not sure if that's in our pool of stuff. But, yeah, I did see that in Seth Reed Studio on Instagram.
That's correct.
Check that
Seth
out.
Reed Studio.
Yeah, and then so that was he someone you brought in specifically to
Yeah, right
that?
There.
Oh, there he is. Yeah.
He was there as an extra. But he was just this very, very wonderful man, a refugee, and with his family, and here lives in. We actually went to his house.
Oh, like
the art director and I went to his house.
And are these extras that were in Texas?
Yeah, he was in Austin.
They're like Austin.
We couldn't believe it.
That's crazy.
How many people there were?
Yeah, it works out well.
Yeah, it worked out really well.
Yeah, you'll find.
And he
the
was
people
a sign painter.
Need. He was what?
He was a sign painter.
He is actually
we
a
recruited
sign.
Him to help us. Yeah,
what?
So that's why
that's a bump there, right?
Yeah, that was really a cool thing. So we obviously it was a bump, and you see two painters standing right next to him, but he's painting. That's his hand on the brush right there.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. So then, like, the authenticity found you.
Yes.
You know, like, you did the best you could. I'm sure you researched as much as you can.
Yeah.
And then where there's cracks, there's people who can help fill it.
We tracked it down.
That live in Austin.
Yeah, of all places.
That's so crazy. Oh, my gosh. So this, what's happening
That's
here.
That's me.
Which That's is just, a wonderful photo.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's just me standing there. The DP, Jeremy Benning, who's the same DP from The Expanse, which is amazing that we got to have him. And he took lots of pictures of all the sets and all the people working on the show. So I popped one in of me.
Yeah, oh,
and
good.
Of course, those are all buildings that we did behind.
Yeah, do you build from scratch or those are ones?
Those
that you
are
build
all
on
from
top
scratch.
Of? Those
right
are
there.
From scratch.
Yeah.
Wow.
With the signage, I'm not sure if that's altered signage yet or not, but. Yeah, the sign on the left, I think, has some stuff that we painted over to fix it. But people can get up on all those balconies. And it's so funny because I look at it and I go, oh, my God, we never finished this or we never did that. Like, everything I look at, there could have been more we could have done.
Right.
But you at some point, you can't do anymore.
Right. You hit the
stop.
Max.
Yeah.
How about this? Do you have to deal with a lot of fire?
We had a great special effects crew, Matt Kutcher and his gang. And they were blowing all those cars. We had, I think, about 20 set dressing cars that we just brought in that were essentially shells. You know, they had tires and everything, but they were no longer functional. So we had to forklift them around.
Yeah.
And then they just, over the course of the show, everyone got blown to pieces. So this was a typical situation.
That's a big step up from your Legos.
Yes, a big
sure
step from the Legos.
You weren't blowing up your Legos.
No, not anymore.
That's another one of the buildings.
We did wire up the buildings. I just read a stat, which I didn't know. There was 30 miles of special effects wiring, which is for charges. So we were able to blow up a lot of walls. And you'll see, obviously, in one and two, you see it, but you can see more of it. Where walls, they're firing a 50 cal or a 240 machine gun, and you see the walls go pop, 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 and that's all special effects. That was all really, like, real practical effects, not visual effects.
Yeah.
So on all of these buildings, you see it.
That's neat. And there was another photo that was on your Instagram that was a building that had spray-painted VFX everywhere.
Could be.
Is that on your Instagram? But is that something that tells us where they're going to blow things up?
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Where I posted something like, wow, it looks like they're going to blow a lot of stuff up
here.
Yes, that's exactly what that was.
Okay.
that's exactly what
so
that
then
was.
So then for you working with visual or with the effects people, you give them like your blueprints and then they talk to you about what to do before you build? How do you work together?
We try. This is where there's a difference between television and film. Because we were really running and gunning, literally, I guess.
Yeah.
So we had already had the structure up, and in some cases they were already plastered. And then the special effects guys were saying, oh, we want to blow this all up. And then so then they would go over what we had already done with huge foam panels that they had wired, and then we would have to plaster over those panels.
Okay.
So it sort of like was a double layer that happened, but not always. So once we sort of got in sync with each other, then it was fine.
Right, because then they could see where your workflow is. They see where they need to plug in.
Yes.
And then I'm sure when you guys are building stuff, you're going to be like, all right, we're at that point.
Correct.
Are you guys going to blow this up?
Yes, exactly.
Good.
Exactly.
And all the different departments working together. Mm-hmm. So this is another one of the city, but there's like, what are the red lines
so
on there for?
There's three pieces to this same photograph. And I think in Instagram, like you swipe left and you see the pieces. So this one, we are marking up for the visual effects people with notes what we think needs to be fixed. Mm-hmm. And that's what the red marks are. For example, that rooftop right in the foreground right is way too clean. Mm-hmm. Like, everything never looks like that. Clearly, no one planned on them getting a camera up there.
Right.
So you'll see later in another second.
Oh.
So there's the final result. So
the
roof is messed up. There's a city beyond, not just trees. And the street keeps going. It's not blocked by a building at the end of it. See, there's that building at the end.
Yeah.
So we've changed a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. If you guys are listening to this on the podcast, I really suggest you get on YouTube and watch this. You want to look at this. You can also see them on Seth's Instagram.
This is what we do now. So I do this on every show. I learned this, I would say, more than anything on Minority Report from Alex McDowell, and we've never stopped doing it. And I strive as hard as I can on every show. So as a production designer, I've been able to implement this more and more and more, where we do everything that we can to control the look and the feel of the show, even when we're going to be gone. Because that visual effects work all happened after the art department is done, because we're done when shooting is done, essentially. But we needed to leave a legacy for them of what things should look like.
Yes.
And if I had my way, I would make them hire me, to stay
going.
On so that I could manage all of it and be present for all of it. And I actually watched Alex do that. And this is so many years ago, but I watched Alex do that on Minority Report, and he was the very first person to do that.
Wow.
So,
that's the norm.
To bring this to the level of television instead of a giant $100 million movie or whatever that was, to bring this to the level of television where you're working so quickly and you have so many talented people around you that you can actually ask for that to happen and somebody will do it. And the collaboration between the visual effects people and the art department has just turned into an almost like we're brother and sister now.
Right.
That's the idea.
Right, because it's anything that you guys build, they're going to have to touch. Like, everything that they touch is something you've built.
Right, and it's really important that the art department sort of maintain the through line of the concepts that were discussed and worked out at the beginning of the show. And sometimes those can sort of bleed away as the people change and the art department's gone. So we did over 200 of those paintings, which I don't know if you actually saw the painting there, but we made a painting for them of what it should look like, and then you saw the final shot there. That was a frame grab from the show.
Yeah, there's like a whole in between there.
Right.
This is what we're imagining. Like, so here's a canvas for you. We've built what we could.
Yes.
This is the kind of stuff we would like you to put on it, and then how they actually execute it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's great.
And I would say just even a few years ago, that was not happening.
Mm-hmm.
This is all really, really fresh. I mean, you shoot a building that's supposed to be a mosque. It's supposed to have a giant dome on it and a minaret and everything, and none of that's there. And we're telling them, okay, this is your shot. Here's what it's got to look like when you're done, you guys.
Yeah.
And then they go and do it.
Good. Oh, that's so good. And then it's a clear vision from beginning to end.
That's correct.
And that's what you want.
Right.
And I think even on small productions to big productions, like if people are just starting to get into creating and filmmaking, like try to have as clear a vision as you can throughout the thing.
Crystal clear.
Yeah. Because sometimes you just have to do it, right? And then you paint the wrong words on the wall and somebody will yell at you. But you do the best you can to be as clear as possible.
Yeah, I think this was very clear. Like, there's a historical narrative to go off of. And there's an amazing amount of reference material, reference photographs.
Yeah, and you guys even used some soldiers, right?
Oh, yeah. Part of the we team. Had real soldiers. We had real vehicle, real tanks and mm-hmm. military vehicles like you've never seen before.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of great stuff to sort of augment our story and make it fully believable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've never seen, I know this is crazy, but like Bradley fighting vehicle, like it gets me really excited, okay? They go really fast and they shoot really like big bullets, like cannons, like 200 rounds
yeah.
a minute. So no one's ever seen those on film.
Yeah.
So we had them.
And they
had
did
them.
It for real.
Yeah, we had them.
Did they shoot them for real?
They shoot them in visual effects, but
okay.
they did
so
everything
like,
else.
What did you blow up?
No,
like,
that would have been bad.
Still there?
Yeah, too scary, but...
That's
but we
good.
Did. We had a lot of cool stuff. We had Abrams tanks, and we
yeah.
had real soldiers in. Obviously, they have to drive those vehicles, but we had real soldiers all over
yeah.
helping us.
Again, I see little baby Seth playing with
Having
all his
fun.
Little toys. And he's
it
like,
was a fun time.
They're big now. Like, yeah, so I'm glad you guys didn't actually like have, be in war. To
no, we didn't.
This.
But our special effects coordinator, those guys blew up so much stuff.
Yeah.
Like when you watch the show, because... Every episode's going to get more and more intense.
Yeah.
And you're just going to see cars getting blown up and buildings getting blown up. All kinds of crazy
yeah.
stuff's going to happen.
Oh, my gosh. So is National Geographic doing a lot of narrative shows like this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I could just be with them and just work on Mars and...
Yeah.
You know, go everywhere, build spaceships for them.
Because this has got to be like a dream for you because it's all things that have legitimate historical reference
yes.
that you can bounce off of. So,
correct.
Like, there's the fun of making things up, but you still, no matter what, even if it's a realistic thing, you still will be making some things up.
Yeah, but let me just say, like, even on The Expanse, what I loved about The Expanse was, and she knows because they used to talk about this mm-hmm. all the time, is it's based on real physics. Like, it's
yeah.
real, like,
the
astronomy
real.
And real science. Like, you yeah. don't stand up in a spaceship when a spaceship is going that way. Like, mm-hmm. you don't do it. So you're actually oriented the other way. Like,
you're telling me Star Trek was wrong?
Star Trek is wrong. So they figured out some magical way that people could stand up in a spaceship.
Yeah.
So in The Expanse, we actually did it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And we had real authority for how we were figuring it out.
So which way is it? Is your head facing the direction that you go?
Yeah, it's like you're standing in a skyscraper.
Okay.
A skyscraper was my metaphor. That's
mm-hmm.
what we used to design. So
oh,
you're basically
okay.
you're in a flying building. So you're standing on a level like that in there, and the building is going that way, but
okay.
that's a rocket.
Right.
And that's the idea. So it has
oh.
all these levels like this, not one big, long level like that.
Right. Now, was that something that was your decision to bring in the
no.
science?
Okay. They were that pair of writers are science-based,
mm-hmm.
and that was the point of the show.
Good. That's great. And that's something really fun for you to play with because you're like, okay, I have these parameters of reality in this thing that is not real.
That's correct.
That's so neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what your other projects have kind of been too.
Yes.
Yeah. Is there one project that stands out to you outside of the ones we've spoken about that is a favorite?
I mean, we haven't really talked much about Cosmos.
Okay.
So between Cosmos and Long Road Home, it's a toss-up because they're both of such high value for society,
mm-hmm.
I would say. I mean, one, we're really all about the soldiers and the experiences that they went through
yeah.
and sort of really sort of remembering mm-hmm. them and understanding.
And Cosmos, I'm not familiar with. Tell me what that
show's
about.
So Cosmos was really about explaining the world and the heavens to us,
mm-hmm.
but it's also about human history. So Neil deGrasse Tyson, you just take an episode and he'll talk about some particular subject, but it just very quickly moves all around. So
okay.
let's say we'll talk about the history of lead in our culture and society, how the Romans used lead and how it was
mm-hmm.
poisoning everybody and nobody knew why they were going nuts. And lead ended up later on in automobiles. And there was this one scientist that was detecting problems. And it sounds boring as I say it
no,
now.
No, this sounds like really, I was like, why did I know the show?
Incredibly dramatic.
Okay.
And much better, like, it's another one of those truth is better than fiction because
uh-huh.
the more you get into it and the more you have someone like Neil deGrasse Tyson
yeah.
telling you about it, the more it just gets crazy
he's
really
so compelling.
Fast. He's such an interesting man.
Right. And so I'm interested, because the way you describe the show, I imagine it's like a lot of, like, educational shows where they just use B-roll. So where were you coming?
No. It's funny that you say that because the first thing when I read the first script and I talked to the producer, I said, so what do you want me to do? You just want me to build a spaceship? Is that it? And he goes, Oh, no. There was so much more to do.
Yeah. So, is he in the spaceship narrating?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I do remember.
Yeah, he really is in the spaceship. Yes. Yeah, he really
you
is.
You sent him to space.
We sent him in the ship, let's see, Sodi, the ship of the imagination.
Okay.
So, and in the earlier version of Cosmos, there was the same thing, but the new one was much more sophisticated.
Okay.
So that's kind of a magical ship. So that's the only thing that you sort of use this as a trick or like a gimmick to sort of get you at the microscopic level or get you traveling through the cosmos really fast or whatever he needs to do to show you things.
Yes.
Take you inside the sun or whatever.
Right.
So you fly around in this ship.
It's the magic school bus.
Yeah, it's very much the magic school bus.
That's awesome.
Very much, yeah.
But like sophisticated.
And really, really interesting. So we were designing things all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, we actually went all over the world and we were designing things and we were pre-vising. So we would be in Iceland and we'd be on the side of a mountain and showing like a volcano or something, and then we would do a painting and show Neil there and show flowers blooming or whatever it was that we needed to show that helped explain the concept that he was talking about. He'd be standing on the edge of some crazy cliff in Alaska that's falling really quickly that's all about climate change. He did an entire episode, of course, on climate change. So we would have all of this material that we would make. We'd make little miniature sets for them, and Neil would be standing on a little set with grass all around, looking
Did you
at
shrink?
Yeah, little teeny little Neil.
I just imagine the way you describe that is that like you're like, cool, okay, so Neil shrinks down and we set him on this set.
Actually, we did that. We did actually do that because we have this huge cosmic calendar where Neil's supposed to be walking through time. And it's like he's walking on like reflective like a mylar floor, but we shrink him way down. It goes like that until he's like nothing.
That's so fun.
Yeah,
I'm definitely gonna watch it. That sounds very exciting. And again, see little baby Seth. It's just like
It was just very fun, and we had motivated a bunch of people. So we just trekked all over the place and shot all kinds of stuff. And Neil, of course, is a magnetic person. And he's a rock star, bigger than any actor is because he's legit. We'd be in Cambridge, and we'd be going around, you know, scouting Cambridge because we were going to shoot in some crazy, really fantastic places there. And then we'd be standing there, and all of a sudden all these students would start showing up, and they'd start gathering around until there was like 100 students all around him.
Yeah.
And all the rest of us would just back off and just go be
all
casual
right.
for
go
a while.
Be a rock star.
And then he would explain, you know, answer questions for however long it took.
Yeah, what kind of questions were people asking him out in the wild? Just anything, probably.
What do you think of the Higgs boson?
Okay.
You know, like things that we don't even know what they're talking about, but they're physics or, astrophysics or mathematics.
Right. Gosh.
We had, I remember we did an Einstein set, so we had a whole chalkboard with researched all the formulas and everything, like some whatever theory of relativity or whatever it was, formula, but it occupied the whole chalkboard.
Wow.
He walked up with his wife. His wife is like a theoretical mathematician or something. So she walks up. She goes, oh, wow, I haven't seen that in a long time. Oh, wait, that let's fix that right there. Like, and you know, like you're just like.
Wow, they're that couple.
Yeah.
That's great.
They were that couple. Yeah.
See, the most that I've gotten to be a, like scientific, I don't know, feel like I knew stuff about science was people were like, I don't know, why is the grass green? I'm like, chlorophyll. But this is a totally different level. So yeah, I think that's what I'm going to binge watch tonight.
You should watch it. It's a great show.
That's great.
It's a show that you can watch without sound. Mm-hmm. Just look at pictures and you'll be blown away.
Okay.
Or you can do the opposite. You can just listen to this man talk like you would on Star Talk, like his show.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to hear him explain things.
Yes.
Either way.
Yeah, because he's so compelling to listen to.
Right.
You're gonna learn something.
Right.
No matter what.
You will.
Talk to us, Uncle
You'll
Neil.
Enjoy
Tell
it.
Us.
You will
Tell
enjoy
us what's
it.
Going on. Awesome. Cool. So let's talk a little bit about how you feel coming from architecture informed the way that you're a production designer versus somebody who wasn't.
Okay. Okay, so I didn't even get into the art department until I was in my 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So I brought with me... I was raised I was raised by a doctor and an artist. My mom is an artist. And the man, my stepfather from the time I was 10, was a world-famous surgeon. Mm-hmm. So I had this, like, combination of irrational kind of craziness on one side.
The doctor?
And, right, exactly. and then this other person that was like, that paper isn't good enough. Get back in there and rewrite that paper.
Yeah.
So I had that. And then when I got to be about, when I was right in the middle of college, I realized, like, I was not going to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't going to happen. So where did I go? I turned to my architect father, and I started working for him, and I realized how much I love drawing. So I brought with me this combination of all three things. So I have no problem sitting down and sketching something. I love to draw. I love to sketch. I'm not going to call myself a great Photoshop painter because I just – never really, in a certain sense, needed to do that.
Yeah.
But I also brought an understanding of how to build things. Mm-hmm. But most important, on any project I get on, and this is what I brought with me, even from architecture, is to sit down and really master your subject. So whatever it is, find an angle, learn about it, you know, make friends with the subject. Like, if literally make friends with the soldiers and talk to the soldiers, or research the heck out of it, or like figure out what it is that you can understand and get an angle on it.
Oh, good. That's really a neat piece of advice for people who might be wanting to get into this, and if they don't have like this whole career ahead of time. But I do think that there's a value of having a career before getting into entertainment.
Sure,
yeah, absolutely. What do you see with that? What are your thoughts on that?
I would say that I brought a different perspective with me. I brought a different work ethic. I was very highly motivated because I was sort of like, okay, I'm changing careers. This is it. Like, better get it right.
Yes.
So I was very hardworking, but I was motivated, and I had a whole lot that I could draw upon. There are a lot of architects in our business, so I'm certainly not the first or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But it helped me to draft and draw. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's different in film, but I already knew what all the techniques were.
Yeah.
And I certainly could get out there and look at something getting built and understood all that. But I also, my architecture background was as a designer. So I did go to design school. I went to SciArc. Mm-hmm. So I love getting a design challenge.
Yeah.
That's my favorite part.
So you're like still flexing the same muscles. And that makes sense that you went into something like this, which is an artistic, but it is business.
That's correct.
So it meshes your parents.
Yes.
And then you just, the architecture thing is your, you know, it's like all of your parents. Like,
All three of them.
Right. That's so wonderful. So what advice do you have for people who are interested in getting into this line of work?
What I would say for someone that gets into this, first of all, I think it's a great thing to go to film school in this case. Not everybody always says that, but I think it's a great thing. And in that sense, I wish I could go back and go to film school. But I would say that take your time. Don't call yourself a designer right away, and don't think that you're like instantly going to do that, because it takes a long time. Yeah. And the more experience you have, the better off you'll be, because every single show that you work on is different.
Yeah.
And because they're different, you're just going to stack up and layer up all this experience. And if you can make your way through the art department and know what an art department coordinator does because you've done that, or know what a set designer does because you've done that, the more of those roles that you can fill along the way, the better you'll be.
Good. Yeah, I say that all the time. I mean, that's also my excuse for having every job ever. Mm-hmm. I've done everything, but it's just so I can talk to people and be like, oh, yeah, this I relate to in this way. This is how I relate to in this way, because you now are like a department head. So even when you're doing creating, you're designing, you still are managerial.
Oh, yeah. If I were to say, like, what happens as you get older. And I just heard this great Annie Leibovitz quote about how thrilled she is that she's getting older because she just gets more and more experienced, and she knows more and she learns more. I'm like, great, yeah, great for the old people, you know. But what I would say is that the biggest part of the job is managing people. Mm-hmm. And by that I mean, okay, I can design, I can see a project, I can budget a project, and there's a thousand things that a designer has to be really good at. But at the end of the day, understanding the people that you're working with, both the people in your department and how what their strengths and their weaknesses are, how they can help and what they can contribute, and how you can pull them all into a group together, as well as the producers that are the ones that you have to go in and sit down and talk to and explain.
Yes.
That is all like a big skill.
Yeah. People skills, I think.
Yeah.
People skills of people above you, below you, on your team, on the same level, just knowing how to go between those levels.
Yes.
And, you know, be pleasant. Don't be a jerk. I don't know. That's always my thing. I'm like, just don't be a jerk, please.
There's no need to.
Yeah. It's not necessary.
It's not necessary.
Not necessary. Well, thank you.
You're
not
welcome.
A jerk. You're wonderful. And this was a fantastic conversation. So thank you for all of your insight.
My pleasure.
Cannot wait to just binge watch all of your stuff. Yeah, so tell everyone at home where they can find you on the internet.
You can find me at SethReedStudio.com. You can find me at Instagram at SethReedStudio. And you can find me at Twitter at SethReedStudio. And
that's great.
That's it.
And make sure you check out The Long Road Home.
And please check out The Long Road Home. It's on Tuesday nights at 10 o'clock on National Geographic Channel.
Yes. Awesome. And I am Mary Lou Mandel. You can find me all over the internet at Mary Lou Mandel. And thank you again for watching On the Fly Filmmaking.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.